You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean
Johnson. AfterBuzz TV.
AfterBuzz TV. From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's American Horror Story After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's American Horror Story After Show.
All right. Oh, I was hoping it was Dominika.
Dominika, me.
Yeah, but welcome back. We are AfterBuzz TV, and thank you for joining us again for another American Horror Story After Show on this Thursday, November 15th. I am Stephen Lemieux, and I'm joined by my amazing hosts here.
Hey, what's up, everybody? JC Rubio.
And?
What? What? What's... I feel like you're so formal. I am David Skiffolitti. Hello, everybody.
All right, and we are going
you
to be...
You are. I'm just a formal kind of guy. Okay, how do you want me to say it?
I think you need a tie, too. You got the scarf, you need a tie as well.
Okay, I'll work on it for next week.
Next week.
Sounds good.
You heard it here first. Anyway, this was a crazy episode, and we're going to go ahead and do somewhat of a recap, break down a lot of the scenes, and break down a lot of what happened. So I do recommend that if you have not watched the episode, please watch it before you listen to this podcast, because there's a lot of stuff that happens.
I kind of call this episode, okay, I know the whole theme this season has been the nod to the old school horror films.
Mm-hmm.
This felt to me a little science fiction because it feels like Empire Strikes Back to me.
Empire's.
The reason I'm saying is because all the...
All right.
No. I went...
It's a very weird... Okay.
Hear me out.
Okay.
The reason being is all the... It seems like everyone that's supposedly the bad is winning. Like, there's no hope for our heroes, for our for our protagonists.
Just
like
it just depends on who you're looking at as who the hero is.
I know you're going with there's no good nor bad, but thinking about it is. I know.
Right.
Which, we've got
Jackie is on the line. All right. Well, we have Jackie Borowski, our other co-host, who
Jackie!
Is no longer with us, but she is here on the phone. Go ahead and say hello, Jackie.
Where'd she go?
Hello? Jackie?
Jackie, why did you hang up? Call back, Jackie.
Nobody down the line.
Is she at Briarcliff?
I live.
What's going on?
She hung up. She'll call back. Jackie, call back and stay on the line.
I hope she's...
All right. Well, we're used to being hung up here at the... No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so this episode was pretty crazy, as you guys have just watched it and seen. I had to watch it twice because I really needed to look back at a lot of the stuff that happened in it. And opening up, this first scene that we have is Sister Jude takes a... Mother Superior's advice and goes and talks to this man, Sam Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very well-shot scene, I must say. I really liked it, and I couldn't place my finger on it why that scene was so interesting to me, using the cameras and everything. I mean, using the mirrors. And watching it again, it's all done in one take.
What?
That whole first scene between...
Between Sam and Sister Jude.
Yeah. Is all one take.
You know... I didn't even pay attention. Maybe it was because of the pacing, because it was just a slow scene to evolve. Just the introduction of Sam, who's played brilliantly by Mark Margolis, who we've seen on Breaking Bad. I believe he was nominated for an Emmy. I don't know if he actually won one.
He's great.
He's fantastic, and I'm excited to see him for the rest of the series. I know he's going to stay here. He is like a scene stealer. I mean, scene stealer. There
we go. Said it correctly.
Did I?
Yeah.
No, you said Dean Sealer.
Yeah,
whatever.
English is my second language, so.
Me too.
Yeah, nice. All right. No, but literally just his introduction and what he's going to bring, you know, how is he going to fit in?
If he randomly shows up at Briarcliff, what would that do?
This episode, I'm still digesting it. David, I mean, what did you make out of that first
Jackie
one?
Is back on the line, hopefully. Hello?
Hi.
Is she?
Yes.
Hey.
I was confused because I was being thrown right into it.
And so you hung up on us instead?
Yeah, you just hate us. We love you.
Not at all. I love you guys. I couldn't tell if I was on air or just like you couldn't hear me. I'm so sorry. I just have like a really short list of laundry list of things to say.
Say it.
The first is good going, Steven, for guessing who Bloody Face was.
That was me?
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
Okay, Jackie, we got to stop you for 1 second. While we're watching the episode, Steven's like, a few weeks ago, someone made the call on who Bloody Face was, and I don't know who it was.
Yeah, it was Steven.
Oh, well, okay then.
Well, good for you.
It was funny because I remember watching it last night, and I was like, oh my gosh, Steven totally called that one. And then I don't know if you guys have already talked about this time, but David said last week that he thinks that Sister Jude is going to end up being the hero, like the unspoken hero of the asylum, and I actually think that's building up to be true.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Thank you. With you, I'm with me, too.
Yeah, I could see that happening, as long as she doesn't get kicked out.
But Jackie...
Also, I love it, but this is like the worst-run asylum in the history of asylums, because... Shelly goes missing, and that Mexican woman went missing, and
Mexican woman.
Looks
oh
for them.
Yeah.
They're
oh
just,
yeah.
Nobody looks for them. They're just like, okay, you know.
Well, they did
missing,
say,
and then if they crawl out in a pile of school children, it doesn't matter.
They did say that they were looking for Shelly, but they just couldn't find her. They sort of just like give up.
Well,
but,
they assumed that they assumed Shelly escaped, like Kit and Lana and all
right.
that. They assumed that she got out, which I think is kind of stupid.
What about
way.
Spivey? What about Pepper? Where are they?
Well, Pepper is still in the bathroom.
Okay.
Pepper
I love Pepper.
Has been in the bathroom for 2 episodes now.
Hey, Jackie, quick
Maybe
question.
Maybe she got locked in.
Quick question. You know when we were first talking about, you brought up the info that all the good characters were going to be bad and vice versa. Wasn't Zachary Quinto supposed to be the good guy? Because he was kind of baddie last season.
I thought he was. I mean, I just assumed that they were giving them opposite roles from last season because of things I had read.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they might have done that on purpose so that we thought he was the great guy. And then when he turns around and is Bloody Face, we're all like, oh my gosh. Because aside from Steven, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't see it at all. I firmly believe what Ryan Murphy said, that all the good was, you know, all the bad guys were going to be good. So I literally found out as she was looking at as Lana was looking at the lamp, and there was areolas on the lamp.
Yeah, like, I was like, ew.
I couldn't figure out if those were nipples or if they were moles. And I was like, what is that? And it really bothered me in that scene. I guess we can talk about it later. But that we were in the room and there was one lamp on and the other one wasn't. And I was like, why are there two lamps and one of them is on and one of them is not?
Mood lighting. Mood lighting, Dave.
Mood lighting.
Yeah, he's a ladies' man. He's obviously a ladies' man.
Oh, clearly. He just loves women.
He has two women in his basement. I mean, yeah. not many people can say that.
And Jackie, what else did you see on that laundry list?
The lamp was a metaphor. I mean,
what?
I thought it was a metaphor.
A metaphor? The boob lamp? As a metaphor for what?
Like a tongue-in-cheek metaphor.
Was it a throwback to A Christmas Story? Because, you know, remember he always had the lamp? He always wanted the lampshade?
I wouldn't say that.
I know, I'm just...
You said Empire Strikes Back earlier, so I'm not counting anything out on you, JC, today.
Jackie, what else did you see? Yeah, you said you had a laundry list.
Yeah, my last item on the laundry list was that I loved Franca Potente as Anne Frank,
so
and
good.
I loved her in Run Lola Run. I don't know if people have seen that, but they should, because it's so good. And she's just such a great actress. And this series has cracked me up because it's so soapy, but you have these, like, top-notch actors, so I'm like, it's like crack. I'm obsessed with it, but I'm like, this is, like, so bizarre, but I'm obsessed.
We were like, there's
nothing to say after that.
It's there we have it. It's like crack.
It's true. Mm-hmm. It is a fantastic show.
And they actually did a lot of little small details that go back to Diary of Anne Frank, the movie, in the episode. And I'll bring one up right now real quick. I was gonna save it for later, but at the end, where is it? I gotta find it. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. While they're doing the montage of Sister Jude kind of having her little foray into the Night Woman role.
Going back to her old vices, sure.
Yeah, when they're doing that, and at the same time, they're also doing the lobotomy. And they play epilogue by Alfred Newman, which is from the Anne Frank movie. So as they show the woman who's supposed to be Anne Frank completely losing who she is through a lobotomy, they're playing the song Epilogue from the Anne Frank movie, which is kind of upbeat in a way, but at the same time, it's kind of foreboding, which is, I thought that was a really cool little fact about the show.
You know, and I know it's only
I said this before, though. I think the show is like, it caters to viewers who want to look things up like that. I think it, because people become intrigued by the little minutiae, and then they say, oh, what is that? I have to know. And then it turns out it's related to something. And I think that's what's so fascinating to me about this series.
That's why I always have Shazam with me while I'm watching it.
So you can look up all the songs.
Seriously, no. You'd be surprised how many shows do that. Like, they have little nods to previous things that kind of coincide with it. Well, do you have any other laundry list things to say, Jackie? Or
no, that was it, and I got to go. But I wanted to say, have a great show, you guys. I miss you.
We miss you too, Jackie.
Miss you too, Jackie.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care.
A round of applause for Jackie.
Woo! All right, and so where were we? We were talking about
Sister Jude.
Well, we just started the first scene. Yeah. So after that, she goes and she talks to Anne Frank, and Anne Frank is telling her that she has to look for the monster, because at this point, Sister Jude still believes that Anne Frank is Anne Frank. And we later find out that her name is Charlotte Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Cohen. Charlotte Cohen. Yeah. And that's another thing is, like, I thought of that she might have been someone else from the Holocaust who might have been taking on the role of Anne Frank. And with a name like Charlotte Cohen, I think that could still be a valid thing, but I don't think we'll ever know, because I think she's kind of weeded out at this point with this series.
I mean, at the same time, like, she's definitely not American.
Yeah.
Right, so they definitely did that for a reason, cast a non-American actress to play this character, this particular woman, and then cast her and titled the character Anne Frank, or what have you, Charlotte Cohen, for a reason. I mean, there's just, like, there's so much about it that I still just don't believe.
But how'd you guys feel about the fact that when the husband showed up, that Sister Jude, her whole, she's like, I have Arden, I have him. But when the husband showed up,
She completely doubts herself.
It blew her whole story out of the water. Everything she thought she had him, and you know, she's been persecuting him since day one, since we started the show, and now she has nothing.
Yeah, I mean, did you expect something like that to happen? Were you expecting a husband to show up or anything like that? Because I really wasn't. When that happened, I was like, oh, they're doing this.
I definitely was not expecting a husband. I was expecting,
like, someone from the past.
Somebody else, but not a husband, which is why I still don't believe the story entirely of her husband. And there's, I mean, we'll get to it later, but.
Well yeah, because we're still talking about the downfall of Sister Jude, and I just found out this.
Or the rising.
Yes.
No, but it's her last name's Martin. I think it's the first time, I'd never heard her last name, so I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but just, I'm trying to pick up anything that can relate to anything, last names first, like even the Sister Superior, if she's going to be back, and Mother Superior, I'm sorry.
With names, there was one thing I caught was that, it's probably easily caught before, but whenever Eunice is talking to Arden, she always uses his first name.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone calls him Arden, Dr. Arden. She always calls him Arthur. And that's, like, even taken up a level when we talk about Arden later, because they have, like, this whole thing going on, because once they try to get Sister Jude out. But Jude tries to believe Anne Frank, but after her husband shows up, she kind of wants to get Anne Frank out of there and kind of wipe the whole thing clean, because usually Jude would want to keep someone who's sick in the hospital, but now she's, like, actively trying to get her out of the hospital to
cover her ass,
yeah, because she doesn't want the animosity from Arden falling back at her. And she still, though, there was one scene when Anne's talking about what she found, what she saw, the monster, and she's like, well, it wouldn't have gotten very far, and she says, well, it didn't have legs. And I'm wondering what Sister Jude knows that would give her that reaction, because when you say she doesn't have legs, she's like, she looks like she thought of something.
Oh, see, I just thought it was just, like, the shock of what had happened. I didn't even catch that.
Well, like, we had a few people talking about monsters, especially with when Kit does his whole come-to-God experience with Sister Jude, he talks about the monsters. So now Jude is aware of, like, kind of an underlying theme around this institute where there are monsters and people are seeing monsters, and she saw the alien. And I don't think she still disbelieves the alien. I think she still has that subconscious belief in it. But when somebody who just showed up to the institute does not really have like the backing of the storm and all that stuff, says something about monsters, it throws her off guard visibly. And when she says something about no legs, it throws her off even more. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if Sister Jude knows something about perhaps Shelley missing her legs or something like that. I don't know. I was just, that was just something that caught me.
David, I don't know if, did you catch this when the husband came in, you know, came into the scene? You just heard him. You didn't see him at first.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the voice, to me it sounded exactly like Dylan McDermott. Listen to it. They sound exactly alike. And at first I was like, because you know he's supposed to come back.
He is coming back. Yeah.
So I don't know if that was just Ryan
intentional.
Yeah, I thought it might have been intentional. I'm overthinking it. I know
you're definitely overthinking it. I think.
Trust me, if you watch it, you'll see that they open the scene and it's the husband's voice. It's his, you hear the voiceover, but you don't see him. So I'm like, is that, you know? I don't know. I'm sorry. I get excited.
But then Jude kind of goes on the back lot for a while. Like we don't hear about her for a few minutes because we go into a few other things. But when she comes back, it has her on the phone with Sam Goodman, the man from the beginning, and she's telling him that she gave him wrong information. She's like, the information was wrong. I got a Boston accent. The information was wrong. And honestly, there's another scene we'll talk about in a minute that you'll probably have the same feelings, that she threw on that accent. So thick.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
During the monologue, I was like, Parr and Mia Drake. I was like, oh, man, she's throwing that on so thick. But right now, she's talking about the threat. He was wrong. She's trying to cover her ass with Arden because she knows that she doesn't have a witness. Because
mm-hmm.
Anne Frank kind of fell through, in a way.
Right.
She kind of lost her mind.
A non-credible witness.
Yeah. But the scene there, what did you think of, like, the whole, what Arden says to him? It's so harsh. Do you remember, like...
I do. I mean, for me, it's sort of, in certain respects, it is sort of justified what he's saying to her, if you look at it through his eyes, being demonized by this woman and being...
But we know that he is who he is.
Right. And I mean, as viewers, yes.
Okay.
I'm saying through his eyes, like in their world, what he's saying is somewhat justified.
Is it, or is it the fact that he's a master manipulator and you're just a pawn in my game?
It's either that or
I don't really think he's the brains behind his operation.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
Who do you think?
I don't know, but I have a sneaking suspicion that he is a puppet as well.
Well, we already know, we have a feeling that he's a puppet with the new Sister Eunice.
Right.
But are you saying someone else, perhaps?
Correct. Monsignor.
Monsignor?
We haven't Correct. Seen much of the Monsignor, but since he knows who Arden is,
mm-hmm.
that could actually be
what
a
episode
viable...
are we on? Five?
Five.
Yeah.
It still could be a different character.
Yeah, you're right. It could be, but...
We're not even halfway through yet. So
I don't think they'd have him do some sort of communication with a different character, if so
not
far.
Not necessarily.
I don't know. We'll have to see.
No, you never know.
David, it's a good call because literally it's episode five.
Yeah, anything could happen.
And for me, it seems like this could be wrapped up by episode eight just because...
Yeah.
No, because, you know, it's always darkest before it's light on most shows and most movies. And you're like, oh, they're going to tie it up within the next three or four episodes. But this is five, so I can only imagine how much deeper we're still going to go.
We're going to see what happens to Lana. And I can't wait for that. The next few episodes are going to be pretty dark and twisted, I'm sure. But the way he phrases things, he says that... He says, the only apology I want from you is you prostrating yourself on the floor and groveling. It's like, that is... He views himself so far above everyone at this hospital. And I love his character and I hate his character at the same time. But I absolutely... The actor plays this role so well. Because the last thing I remember him in is The Green Mile. So it's so different.
I mean, the man has a God complex for sure.
Yes, definitely.
I'm trying to think of anything else that stood out for Sister Jude this week.
Well, of course, we still have a few more scenes with her because she had that phone call scene where she's kind of...
Oh, that's right.
She's kind of off her hinges, and he tells her... He basically tells her she's finished. And she basically doesn't deny it. So the next time we see her, she is sitting on her bed, and she's talking to the guard, Mike, I believe. What was his name? Mike or Mark?
Frank.
Frank, yeah. I knew it was a K. Anyway, I wrote it down last week. I forgot to write it down this week. Frank, and she's talking to him about how she's done. Like, she doesn't know what to do. This is where she does the monologue, where her accent was so thick. So thick. I'm from Boston. You know, I work at the hospital. It was a little too much for me. What did you think?
I think, as far as the accent goes, I think it was more having to do with her trying to stay emotionally invested in it and keep the accent at the same time, which could be a little bit difficult for an actor in a technical respect.
What is the meaning of that monologue about the squirrel? What is, you know, cause I've read some stuff online about it, and going to Jackie's point of Sister Jude being the ultimate hero in all of this, and the fact is that the squirrel died. You know, that she ran over the little 12-year-old girl, and it was one of the blogs I read, and it seemed to me that aliens can take, this is far-fetched, aliens can take any type of shape or form. Could be a squirrel, 12-year-old girl. This is what I read. I know I'm good.
Okay.
but each time she's in a way kind of failed in her eyes.
Well, I don't think the girl, I mean, I don't think the squirrel was an alien, of course.
I thought it was funny. I read it on the blog and I was like, that's far-fetched, but you never.
Grain
of salt.
What I got from the monologue was how old?
Squirrel was an alien.
Did she say how old she was when that happened to her?
Little girl.
Little girl?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was her disbelief in God. I think that was her explaining where she lost God in her life, was when she found the squirrel and it died, and she was praying as hard as she could, and nothing happened. I think that was where she lost God in her life. And that's the kind of significance of the character, because her mom was like a hard worker and everything, and I'm sure that they were religious and everything. But that's when she kind of lost her beliefs in God, because she was praying so hard. It was a very emotional monologue. She played it really well, aside from the fact that the accent just kind of tacked on a little too thick for me. But it was still it had an impact. Mm. It definitely had an impact. And at the end of the scene, we have Frank, and she says, "My goose is cooked." And I love that they actually use that, because Thanksgiving is next week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if some people have goose for Thanksgiving. I've had goose for Thanksgiving. Anyway, whatever.
It's a bird.
It's a bird, yeah. You can just eat a bird. But he says something pretty interesting. Like, that kind of makes me think that there's something between him and her, that he kind of likes her. Did you think that at all?
Because he called it? Because he said, "I kind of called it."
I didn't think that you were going to last long because you're a woman.
Well, he didn't say it in those words. The way he said it was a lot more friendly, in my opinion. He was like, "Don't blame yourself. You're a strong woman." And usually guys will not say, "You're a strong woman," as they say something negative like, "You're in a man's world. Don't blame yourself. It's not your fault." They weren't going to let you do it at the beginning. Like, you were failed from the beginning. I don't know. At the same time of what he's saying, I kind of felt some sort of connection between the two of them.
I felt the opposite. I think he's in cahoots with someone else. He could be on Arden's side. He could be, you know, you never know. Because he showed up right after Anne Frank or Charlotte had the gun pointed at Arden, and Frank showed up right away. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You never know. At first, I thought he was the one who covered up Shelley. And we later found out it was Sister Mary Eunice.
Oh, well, I automatically assumed it was Eunice as soon as he told her to go to the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was thinking Frank for some reason, so... My compass is off. I'm out.
No. That's actually a good point, though. I didn't think about that, because I honestly think Frank's on Jude's side. But if Frank's on Arden's side, maybe he's playing the field like Eunice. Maybe he's the next person to get possessed. Dun dun dun. Yeah, I don't know.
Is he a big enough character to really dive into like that? I think he's just like a mid-level henchman, you know, that's easily manipulated by the powers that be.
Well, like what Dave said, it's episode 5.
Anything can happen.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll see.
I mean, last season, Connie Britton got pregnant, episode 10. Okay.
Well played, so well played.
That is true. So, yeah, that's the second to last scene with Jude. And the last one is what I was talking about with the song from Anne Frank, is during the same time as Anne Frank getting the lobotomy, it shows... Sister Jude getting all done up in her nice red dress and putting
black
on
dress.
Her lips. What?
She wore a black dress.
It was a black dress?
Red slip.
Red slip.
That you saw later, yeah.
Oh, okay. But yeah, she was going out to the same bar, it looked like, and trying to pick up another guy.
You know, it makes sense what you said about the squirrel and about the 12-year-old girl, because she lost her faith.
you know, with the squirrel. When she unfortunately killed the girl, she went back to the church, and now she's lost her faith again.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
back to the bottle.
Back to the bottle.
Yeah.
Who's she going to kill this time to come back to the church?
I don't know if it has to be, if it's going to go that far, but something's, you know, it's going to be a catalyst to bring her back. You know, something, obviously. So,
I don't necessarily think that she's going to need something to bring her back.
Is that too hokey, too, like, movie style?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, maybe she's going to stay without the church for the rest of the, and that's going to make her an interesting character.
That's possible.
Because if she's the head of this institute that's supposed to be a nun, her being not so much in the church anymore, would that'd be an interesting twist. I'd say that.
Man, this show's got me all kerfunkled, bro.
All right, so that's enough of Jude. I think we kind of tackled a lot of the Jude. Let's go into like some Kit and some Arden and some Grace and some Anne. We'll do some
and
of the
Alma and
yeah, and Alma and like that, da 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 da.
Okay, question: why is it that every time Kit has sex, mm-hmm. the aliens show up? When Luna, you know, I mean Alma, when he had sex with Alma, they showed up. When he had sex with Grace, the aliens showed up. In the first episode,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then those are some cosmic I'm not gonna say
cosmic orgasms.
There you go.
You know,
we are just assuming that they are aliens.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think that they are.
You think it's a construct for them not being able to deal with the issues at hand?
I don't know.
Well, when we see Grace, of course, like when we open up with Kit and Grace, it's them having a very intimate moment through the walls. Mm-hmm. And the way they filmed that was it showed them through the walls, and then it showed them together, then mm-hmm. through the walls. And then Eunice comes in, being as diabolical as she is, and tells Kit that, oh, you're going to dinner. No, we canceled your surgery because you showed very much promise to Jude. And then what about Grace? Oh, we haven't forgot about her. That is such an evil line right there. Yay! when she's leaving and she's like, oh, you're still scheduled for surgery in the morning. Yay! Oh, that was killer.
So what happened in that dream sequence? Okay, so you're saying...
Well, if you watch the dream sequence closely, Alma's pregnant in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we see Grace again, she is bleeding.
Right. Yeah.
And in the dream sequence, they cut her stomach open.
Yeah.
Right, so if we're talking about aliens... I really don't like aliens. But... it's possible that they are, you know, impregnating these women, maybe. I mean, who the hell knows?
Yeah.
There's a picture floating on the internet with Grace's character, and it looks like she does have, like, a baby bump.
Right.
In an upcoming episode. So,
huh.
Does Kip have strong swimmers? I don't know what's going on.
I don't know. I didn't.
He's
I thought
impregnating
it was,
everybody.
Well, yeah. The last we see Grace is she's being abducted by the aliens, kind right. of, or hallucinating, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we see Kit find her, and she's like, she obviously had the sterilization surgery, but she's like bleeding,
mm-hmm.
like a lot,
right?
Like
miscarriage bleeding.
Like mm-hmm. yeah, like miscarriage bleeding, and she wouldn't be bleeding if they did the surgery in Arden's lab. But what happened to the surgery then? Because, like, she was supposed to do the surgery, then she's suddenly in
right.
the room.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, so is she sterilized, or was it just the aliens, or were the aliens a ruse that they used to pull the patients out of the thing to get them ready for surgery?
Or are the aliens just something that we're seeing, and what's actually happening is Arden is doing all this?
Yeah, because mm-hmm. Grace totally broke down. I mean, there is also when we see the aliens... There's another common clue is when Kit sees the aliens in the beginning, he's freaking out because people are outside the room, and then he starts seeing the aliens. When we see the aliens with Jude, she's drunk, she's freaking out because the mm-hmm. people are missing, and she's worried about her job. She sees the aliens. This time, Grace is such a strong female character, and then for the first time, you see her, well, not for the first time, but for the first time, like, really intense,
mm-hmm.
as soon as they tell her that she's scheduled for the surgery and she's going to be sterilized, she totally loses it. She starts screaming, she falls to the floor, and then we see the aliens. So, I mean, it might be somewhat of a hallucination, in my opinion. Still, I still want to believe that they're not going Indiana Jones on this route.
And don't think
meaning what?
Meaning that the aliens aren't real.
Oh. Okay, I got you. I didn't see that Indiana Jones.
And
don't.
I was going to say, you know how I brought up the fact that the aliens came, you know, come every time kid has sex? It was actually, that's a quote from Ryan Murphy himself.
Really?
Say, notice every time the kid sees, has sex with someone, the aliens come, and it's very important to the script.
Oh.
So,
someone kit comes, the aliens come.
Interesting. Interesting.
Oh, man.
For our viewers to, you know, just plant that and just pay attention and make sure he doesn't have sex with any other women on the show.
Yeah. So, that's...
Well, he's arrested anyway, remember? He's been taken away.
At the end, Kit, after he finds Grace in that state, she starts screaming that he was right as the cops come and arrest him because Threadson, or Oliver, set him up the bomb, basically. Threadson made him admit to his crimes on tape. And told him that that would get him out of the chair, but I think Threadson was just setting him up to take the fall.
Well, I mean, from what we find out about Threadson in this episode, he's trying to cover his own tracks.
Well, of course, yeah.
But it's no fair. I'm mad. I'm mad at Ryan Murphy.
Why?
About the show. Because this whole time I thought Zachary Quinto's character, Oliver, it was supposed to be good. The whole time, I'm the last guy into the party. Honestly, you called it a few weeks ago. You called it even before the show started, David, that Oliver Threadson was going to be the bad guy, or he was going to be the bloody face. I literally did not pick up on it.
Something that I think that Ryan Murphy saying what he said before the show started. I have something for News and Gossip. He's known since before the show started that. That and Quinto also knew that since before they started filming that he was going to be bloody face.
Oh man,
I'm mad, but yet it's the only way he could have gotten away with it with just that small little lie. And I hate him, but I love him at the same time. See,
exactly.
I mean, he's a very smart man,
you know. And of course, we should have known with. You know who gets top billing on the show, right? It's Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, I'm sure.
His first name is in the credits when the show starts. It's his name. So, you know, because at first he's just, like, I thought, he's the psychiatrist, whatnot, you know, and he's going to be in and out. Sure, he'll be an integral part of the story, but now he's bloody face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he is one of the probably highest paid actors on the show as well, because he's A-list actor now. He started with Heroes, and then he moved into other things, and now he's Star Trek II. I mean, he's up there now.
And what's unique about his performances is that his stillness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he's in the room with Lana, and he's just so still, and you're just waiting for every single word that's going to come out of his mouth, like, what's next? You know, I finally got clued in. Oh, he's bloody. Oh, my God. He's something. He's the best. I still didn't know he was bloody face till we put on the damn mask. But literally, his stillness, it makes him just cold, calculating. I love him. He's chewing up scenery every episode. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty great. There's one thing I want to go into Arden with really quick, then we'll go into anything else we need to. Just like spark notes for Arden.
Sure.
Okay, Arden gets shot, of course, and then he ends up offering the surgery to Anne Frank's husband, of course. And then there's a scene between him and Eunice where Eunice is on her knees in front of him cleaning his wound on his inner thigh. I mean, I thought that was very intimate in a way. Mm-hmm. And when they're discussing things, they discuss that Sister Mary Jude's done.
Mm-hmm.
They discuss that, and Eunice is on his side, and Eunice says, what is it? She's like, I just want to be your right-hand man.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he's in the top, she's going to be his right-hand man. And he tells her that he trusts her more than anyone else at this place. And that was really interesting because wasn't she dumping food for the creatures before she was even possessed?
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of a chaotic, evil character before even being possessed. Now it's just off the hinges.
I wouldn't say that, because she was just doing what she was told. You know, at first Sister Jude would...
But with no remorse.
Yeah.
She was scared into it. Think of it, she was young, naive, little... And that's why Sister Jude would even address her in the first episode when she was going to whip her, and she, you know, was trying to teach her to develop a backbone.
Mm-hmm.
But now that she's been possessed, I think the thing is that she's setting up Arden for the biggest fall of them all. That's why Shelley was released. That's why Shelley was found in the school. That's why she's moving up. He's completely vulnerable to her. So now that he's open, that's when
she's going to strike.
But do you think that Eunice, I mean... After we find Shelley in the school, do you think, because I do, think that Eunice is setting Arden up now to fall?
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
That's what he said.
So that's what I'm saying. I think she wants to set him up in a place where the whole world sees in a way, so he can pay for his previous crimes.
Okay.
Yeah, because she's possessed. She knows everything. She
I don't think she
Nazi.
Cares about that. I think she just cares about taking over.
Yeah, that...
You think so? No, because the devil can do that. But her main MO for me is she's turning everyone against each other.
Yeah.
Having everyone crumble. Having,
right.
That's where she finds her menace. It's almost... I wouldn't call her the devil. Almost like Loki, the god of mischief.
I've said Loki like every episode.
Have
I'm
you
like,
really?
Yes. Okay. Loki. She is definitely a mischievous character.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything about Arden that you want to go into at all?
I'm trying to think that we covered...
Because, I mean, he really only had those two scenes, the one with Jude, and he had that one with...
The fact that the picture at the end where Charlotte, yes. Mm-hmm. And she saw him, you know, as Hitler's right-hand man.
That was such like a 50s throwback there with the perfect 50s wife, where she just does everything. It's like, oh, don't do that, dear. I'll make it for you. And the lobotomized... When we have the woman of the strong... I like the contradiction of we have Jude, who's like the strong woman trying to break that glass ceiling, and then we have Anne Frank, who gets her lobotomy, and she becomes the picturesque woman of the 60s and 50s. She mm-hmm. she is the woman that they show in the commercials and things like that, who don't even know about the glass ceiling.
Is that why they did the screen like that?
It was just like the way they did the music and everything. It was just like an old sitcom show, showing the wife who loves her husband making the drinks. Don't do it. Like the Brady Bunch to a point.
Why did he ask her if she was happy? And did you notice when he asked her, she had like a slight little pause?
A smirk. Yeah. Also.
She is, once you're lobotomized, you're basically, it's like a weird, you're like weirdly a zombie right. In like some aspect. You're just kind of slowish to a point, and you're weirdly a zombie like, ah.
So wouldn't she just respond instead of just taking that pause? That there was a pause for a reason.
I mean, would you pause if somebody said, are you happy? Yeah.
Well, if she's a zombie, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we'll see her again.
Okay.
I don't think we are,
but it...
What's that about?
Because
context.
The way that she is portrayed as after being lobotomized, I don't think is realistic.
Mm. So is that the husband's idealized view? Or, you know, because it's... Remember, he always said, we see what we want to see in the
right.
series. So is...
I don't know.
With the smirk after she tried to smother the baby, I mean, that's what kind of leads you on. Because mm-hmm. after she tried to smother the baby and then you see her kind of smirking, it's kind of evil in a way. You're suspicious of her.
Okay.
Let's go into last scene real quick, because I do want to bring up that picture before we finish the show.
Mm-hmm. We should tease that. It has basically all the answers, and we've had them in front of us the whole time.
Yeah, from October 17th, before the show aired, we have this picture that has a lot of stuff we found on...
Tumblr. I can pull it up on my computer, but we'll check it out in a minute. But bring up that last scene.
So the last scene, the previous to last scene with Oliver and Lana. This was a great... I had so many people texting me talking about, oh my God, you gotta watch the episode right now, oh my God, because of this scene. He finally gets Lana out of the asylum. He finally gets her out, says 6 o'clock, meet me at the stairs, literally just walks right by the guard by lighting a cigarette, gets her into the car, gets her home, and that's when things get awkward, is he's sitting on the couch, and she's like, she just wants to go home. And he's like, no, you got to stay here because I'm at risk here. And then he gets her a glass of wine. I think the wine was drugged. I honestly think the wine was drugged.
Probably.
He probably didn't want to just send her down that trap door.
Mm-hmm.
But so then she tries to call while he's getting the wine, hangs up the phone. You can't use a phone call. I'm at risk. And then she has to go to the bathroom after we see a nice little skull mint bowl. Love the skull mint bowl.
That's awesome.
And the nipple lamp.
Yeah.
We saw some nipple lamps.
Boob lamp.
And then she goes and finds a bathroom, which isn't a bathroom. It's actually his hobby room. And the way he described it as a hobby room, kind of, that's a nice little joke there. But then he sends her down after, what did he say? Oh, yeah. What material is it?
Skin.
Skin. Bang. Down. And the next time we see Lana, she's on the floor in tiles, chained up. And she sees Wendy in the same room, and when she rolls her over, she's frostbitten.
Mm-hmm.
She's a smitten, frostbitten lover.
You were waiting to say that, weren't you?
No, I just made it up, but I'm bad. I'm bad. And I liked how she backed up into the freezer that Wendy was probably in, and that's just kind of evil. But then we see Thredson comes in, and he says his amazing... Every line in this scene was great. I loved it. And he's like, I put her on ice. I thought she'd be more pliable now. I was going to this now around the time I usually take the skin off, but it wouldn't suit our needs. Why don't now we're going to restart our therapy. So I think we're going to see Lana in Threads, and Lana's going to be intact for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he's going to be doing experiments and therapy experiments on her because he has a live specimen of a lesbian. Yeah. As horrible as that sounds, that's like that kind of seems like the whole, if he's crazy like that, that seems like something he'd do. And then finally, the moment we've all been waiting for, he says, don't worry, she won't bite. And he puts on the bloody face mask.
The big reveal.
And says, because I took her teeth.
Okay.
I love the scene. I loved it.
You know, great. You can start from the beginning of that scene because remember he said, I never worked here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did he get what does that mean? Did he kill
He didn't work there. He was this there for.
I think that was just an insult to Jude, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but he wasn't, like, hired by the asylum to work there. He was brought in for a second opinion.
But do you think the way he said that, could he even be a psychiatrist?
Possibly not.
Probably. He probably is, judging by how nice his apartment is.
Yeah, he has a beautiful, huh?
Totally nice apartment.
Very fancy.
Nice lampshades. I really want to know where he buys those.
He makes them.
You know, there's a parallel, actually, to him. You know how there's always nods to, you know, horror films throughout the season. And this season is Texas Chainsaw, and this episode is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
There you go.
And the reason, it's because it's Ed Gein, I believe he's a serial killer, who actually used to, you know, take off the skin off his victims and turn it into furniture, into belts, and I'm reading it here. If you guys can go to Wikipedia, it's
sexy.
Ed Gein, authorities, when they caught him, they found four noses, they found nine masks of human skin, bowls made from human skulls.
There you go.
So there's your connection. He was a serial killer from Wisconsin.
And that is a big parallel then.
Yeah, Ed Gein. So if you guys want to look it up at home, let us know for sure, you know, if you find any more stuff about him. So.
Kind of looks like Zach Quinto.
Well, we're running out of time. Let's go ahead and throw that picture up, Martin.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, guys. Doesn't. We came across this little picture. I found it on Tumblr on quickerthandead.com. So, oh, we have it up on screen.
Yeah, yeah. Just tell them where they can find it because you probably won't be able to see this very well.
No, he can bring it up to the live feed. Just bring the picture up to the live feed, Martin. And you'll see all these little notes on here, little red linings. And what did you think was the interesting one on this?
All of it, actually, because it gave... Okay, this is a promo picture that came out before the series came out on the 17th of October, and it had all the answers for you. And I'm going to start just with the first one, Threats in Shadow. It's Bloody Face watching Lana and his girlfriend take notes. So if you notice Threats and look behind him, it's Bloody Face. So it's already giving you the clue of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, overlooking Lana and Wendy. Mm-hmm. And then you just move further, and you're looking at... If you look down to the lower left part of the screen, you've got Arden and Sister Eunice. He's, you know, he has her, but he has her hand on her thigh, and she's got a rope on him because she's got him with a noose.
Right.
Because I've got you. Kind of like what we see going on right now.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to expose all the secrets. She's got him by, I'm going to say the balls. She's got him by the balls.
Yeah.
You know, literally, but you look at this picture and it literally tells you everything that you've seen so far in the season.
Personally, I think the most interesting is the one all the way at the top that you can't really read, but it says, the alien light coming through the window but also has yet another biblical illusion.
What does that mean? I don't get it.
Well, like, usually when you see light... Well, like, look at
like, who's talking?
I don't know. Maybe it's that when you look at this picture, you see the light beaming through the window like the light of God, because usually, like, you associate the beams of light through clouds kind of as very spiritual in a way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're comparing aliens to God in that respect.
I mean, they're also, if you look all the way down at the bottom, Chloe Sevigny in the position of Christ.
Of sexiness.
Mm-hmm. And the quote is the belief that they can beat the crazy out of people with God. Shelley in a Christ-like pose angle also obscures full view of her legs.
Oh.
Yeah. Remember how they were trying to... Remember in the beginning, they were trying to cure her for her whoredom. That's right. I said cure.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's a really interesting picture. Yeah, feel free to pause your YouTube video and look at it for a while. Seriously.
Yeah, check it out, guys. And we failed to mention, if you guys aren't watching us on, you know, on AfterBuzzTV.com, you can also go to iTunes, subscribe, comment, let us know what you think. You know, we do listen, we do answer some of your feedback. So it also, you know, helps us keep track of our shows because this is all free content. We have about 40, 45 shows a week. So whatever you do reply, it does help us out because it does keep the lights on.
Please, 5 stars. We need more 5-star ratings, guys. 5 stars. But I think that pretty much wraps up everything.
News and gossip.
Yeah, I was going to say, going to news and gossip.
Okay.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Awesome.
Let's see what we got here. American Horror Story renewed for a third season. Woo-hoo. FX horror anthology Shockfest has ordered 13 more episodes from executive producers Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk. With American Horror Story Asylum, Ryan and Brad have raised the bar in every way from Murder House, the first American Horror Story miniseries, said FX president and general manager John Landgraf. And their original idea, the notion of doing an anthological series of miniseries with a repertory cast, has proven groundbreaking, wildly successful, and proved to be trendsetting. We can't wait to see what deviously brilliant ideas they come up with for their third miniseries. American Horror Story is averaging 5.2 million viewers with, when you include DVR, up 19% from last season.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. So we'll see. Any ideas of what you guys think next season might be about?
Yep.
Because it is including Jessica Lange. She is already,
She's already signed on
for next season.
A ghost town.
A ghost town.
Wild West.
Something like that. Yeah.
I could see some Wild West going down. Like,
I wouldn't think ghost because they did that first season.
Season one, yeah. Or a carnival. Like something going on in a circus.
All right.
You know, so, but then that's similar to the asylum.
Yeah, right? I don't want to see the circus. I'd say a Wild West ghost town would be interesting, because especially with the popularity of like shows like Hell on Wheels and things like that,
right.
Doing something very...
Deadwood zombies.
Yeah, Deadwood zombies, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And they did Aliens this time. They're doing like Ghosts last time. I'm wondering if it's even going to be Ghosts next time. It might be something completely different, like... Well, they're doing Frankenstein this time, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Let's go into some predictions.
And now...
This literally is the worst... It's the hardest show for me to give a prediction on.
Because anything could happen.
Yeah, I'm always wrong. I'm always wrong. Literally. Sorry, I just had to let that out. I'm sure a lot of fans feel the same way. But prediction for me next week... I just want to find out what's going on with Grace. Is she pregnant or not? It's more not a prediction. I just questions I have. Not predictions, they're questions. If she's pregnant, and what is going to go on with Sister Mary Eunice? How is she going to tighten that noose around Dr. Arden's throat a little bit tighter? What is she going to do? Because she has him. And right now she's his play toy, just like everyone else is his play toy. She's his play toy. That's all I got, man.
All right.
I got no predictions. I'm just questions, man.
I don't think I have any predictions tonight either.
It's tough, huh?
No predictions, Mr. Skiff?
Give him some time. It's kind of like when you're ordering food and you want people, one of the people on the table don't know what they want. Someone's got to order. So say your predictions, Steven.
Okay, well, I have a few predictions. Okay. I don't think Grace is pregnant.
Okay.
I'm going to say that right off the bat. I think that the surgery was a hallucination for her to cope with the surgery, and I think she probably ripped her own stitches out, and that's why she was bleeding so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think Sister Mary Jude is going to find out something about Oliver and try to investigate that, because she can't exactly go after Arden anymore. I think Eunice is going to be, after what you said, I think Eunice is going to be the downfall of Arden, definitely. Mm-hmm. Sister Mary Jude is going to be the downfall of Oliver Thredson. And I think, honestly, I think Lana is going to survive the season, just not intact.
Ooh, that's good.
Interesting.
Of course.
And Kit's going to be sent back to the asylum. Because after what Grace said, like, you were right, everything you said is true, I saw Alma. I think he's going to start spouting even more crap about the aliens. And they're going to be like, what are you talking about? This guy's obviously insane, send him back to the asylum.
That's good stuff, man. Wow.
Whoop, whoop.
Dave? No? David?
I
no.
don't Come on, Skiff. Have anything.
All right.
Not
what
yet.
What about Martine? Martin, do you have any...
Martine.
No, I am as confused with this show as all of you are.
Okay,
so,
well...
we're out.
I guess,
thanks, Martine.
I guess that's it. Thanks for listening to our American Horror Story After Buzz podcast. Definitely try to subscribe, rate us 5 stars.
Where can they tweet you, man?
You can find me at Stephen Lemieux on Twitter, or that's pretty much where you can find me.
And you can find me at You Can Call Me Skiff on Twitters.
And I'm going to do a quick plug of Catch Me on a new show called It's a Wrap on Clever Movies, and you can always follow me at The Everyday Man.
All right, well, thanks again for tuning in, guys. Have a good night, and we'll catch you later.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.